We have Ross on the line, myself. Margie, you're still there?
Yes.
Barbara, you still there?
Yes.
Good. Olaf, you still there?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, Karen is still here?
Yes.
Have I missed anyone? Great. So moving on to the first item on the agenda, which is our last call for comments on issues 30 to 38. Does anyone have anything else that they would like to raise in relation to those outstanding issues? Great. I'm taking silence as confidence. Perfect. Moving on to number two then. Does anybody have any comments on either of the draft documents that Karen prepared? Or did Karen have any final comments on those documents?
Which ones are those?
That would be the draft transfer advisory and the denial clarifications document that were sent around with the original, not the original, but they were sent around on May 29th.
Okay.
There was four documents distributed in that one message. The, what was it, draft...
Yeah, I guess I have a comment on the advisory. We talk about the term registrar hold.
This is Margie, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's Margie. Is there a definition for registrar hold? I'm not sure. It may be useful to describe it if there is a definition.
Karen, is that something you can clarify if there is or isn't a definition?
I don't think there is any definition. Are you talking about in the reasons for denial, there's the one saying that if they're going to deny it for non-payment, it has to be in registrar hold status?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, yeah, we can add a definition in there.
Taking some notes here. Bear with me. And there would be some source or there's a place where we can fall back to, but we don't have to create that definition. Is that fair, Karen?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. Great. Good.
Yeah, I think I know what it means, but I assume there's some place where it's spelled out, right?
Yeah, I think the original intention there was that was the. The registrar interface command that allowed you to stop changes to a domain without taking it out of the zone file.
Right.
Or I'm sorry, stop changes and take it out of the zone file. So.
There may be a list of various statuses that would constitute a domain hold, like maybe transfer prohibited, server updates prohibited, things like that in the EPP protocol.
Does it resolve if it's in register or hold?
Oh, well, I'm 100% certain.
Okay. Yeah, just whatever the definition is, I don't care.
As long as it's accurate, that's right.
As long as it's accurate and we know what we're talking about.
Yeah. And I think, Barbara, that's a great idea to use those, to refer to that protocol document wherever we can.
Yeah, I think there should be something in there that indicates what. It probably actually even has a definition for registrar hold.
Right.
And can I ask a question? What is the advisory for? Is it something that ICANN would publish out to the registrars? Is that what it is? Or I'm just trying to understand what the advisory document is for.
Sure. Karen, if you could answer that question, that'd be great.
Sure. I think how we contemplated it originally is. That it would be posted on the website just for public information. We used to do a lot more advisory type communications. And then it would be, it's mostly relevant to registrars, so I think it would be, sent specifically to the registrars and with, it's mostly reminders or clarifications directed at them then a point of contact for them if they have other questions or things that they want to bring up.
Okay. Okay.
And just for clarification, Karen, at the end of the first sentence where it says this is available at, and this is the list of issues that we've brought forward to the NFO, I guess, mm-hmm. the issues that we're discussing in agenda item one, mm-hmm. Those will be posted as well, and then that reference will be inserted.
Right.
That'd be correct. Then, right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, Margie, in my mind, this has always been the document that tells registrars, it tells the community at large, how ICANN will be interpreting it and enforcing these agreements.
Right. I'm thinking of other ones we've done in the past, seen in the past, and they have been very helpful for that.
Yeah.
So my question is, and maybe this is going to be controversial.
Yeah, go ahead.
But is it possible to clarify what we mean by transfer in 9? Because that's one area where registrars are acting a little different. I guess they have different definitions of what the 60-day rule applies to. Or is that a policy thing that needs to be fleshed out first?
In point number 9?
Yes, point number 9, 60 days of transfer.
Okay, you're going to make us scroll back here. Wait a second.
Sorry, I'm in the advisory.
No problem. Let me just get on the same page.
I'm sorry, reasons for denial here. I'm section 4.
I don't even have the document open, so you really have to.
Oh, yeah.
If somebody else is more up to where Margie is at, please feel free to jump in while I ask.
Yeah, so what we're talking about is the reasons for denial, and there's 9 of them. The last one is a domain name is within 60 days after being transferred, or 60 days after, after being transferred. And as you've identified in some of the other documents, registrars kind of taking different positions on what that actually means.
Right.
And so I don't, you know, if it's possible, it'd be great if there could be a definition of what we mean or what's meant by transfer in that context.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong document here, Margie. Which one are you referring to?
Okay, I'm in the advisory.
Yeah. Oh, in the advisory. Okay, I'm
sorry. I haven't left the advisory.
Page 3. I know that.
When you said
I found it.
Page number 9. I'm sorry.
Sure. Page 3, talking about reasons for denial, and it's the 9th reason.
Right. So this is Karen. Where that point is right now, the point about we need more definition around what this means, is as an item in the document that's called denial clarification. And it's kind of we actually have three categories from the original full list of issues that we had. You know, one being, you know, points to clarify in the advisory, one being policy issues that the GNSO can address, and then the third category is sort of in between, and that's what the denial clarifications document is. You know, for it to be really a binding provision that would be something that we could enforce, it would need to be you know, part of the output of the GNSO, but what the intention is with that document, those 4 points in there are, you know, this is not a whole, 2-year-long policy process. This is a point. This is that we've identified. This is what we recommend to address it, and then hopefully that would streamline the process for the output from the GNSO.
Okay, so I'm hearing that you probably it's too early to include something like that in the advisory. What you're saying, Karen?
I guess so. It's there's a difference between including something in the advisory and having it be an actual, you know, part of the policy
mm-hmm.
that we could enforce and act on.
Okay.
So.
Okay, I got it.
And it's, Karen, I'm not sure if we ever entirely landed on this issue. It was
uh-huh.
one of the conversations I was hoping would come out of this next couple of meetings, or the last couple of meetings.
Uh-huh.
Definitively, taking my chair hat off, putting my registrar hat off, the last set of policy we had on this was the inter-registrar transfer policy. So all of the policy recommendations made were made within that context. I'm unclear as to how this becomes a policy issue, given that the previous set of recommendations were only dealing with inter-registrar transfer policies. Like, I'm not sure how this could be any more clear that we're referring to inter-registrar transfers and not internal transfers or transfers of registration or transfers of ownership, et cetera.
Karen, Olaf here. Isn't that one of, well, sort of item six on the full list, that the definition of the term transfer, whether an internal transfer falls into the category of transfer or not? Whether that's a policy question or not, I don't know. But isn't that, aren't we touching on that domain?
Well, so Ross, were you saying that you think that the language is already clear the way it is, that it refers to a transfer, and it's not really a point of discussion what we meant by it?
Well, I think the what's unclear to me is whether or not additional policy is needed. I think we all agree on the original intent. What I hear is some lack of clarity as to the effect of that intent right now. In other words, did the original task force sufficiently state its policy recommendations in a clear enough manner that they can be made binding today?
Okay.
I'm hearing from you that the answer is no, they cannot be made binding, and I'm just wondering how that was lost, given that the the question is this a transfer or not? And yet the scope of the original recommendations were extremely clear as to what constituted a transfer and what didn't. At least in my opinion, right? Like, again,
statement. Okay. So, when I wrote that document that had the 4 points of clarification in it, I didn't find anything in the original task force documents that referred to that, or that was relevant to that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I need to go back and comb through those again. Because if there is, language, that comes from the original policy work that can be used to support what we're trying to do, then I think that makes it a little easier.
Right.
Is it generally agreed, though, that a transfer is a transfer between registrars and it does not include internal transfers or registrant transfers or anything else, but that it is just a registrar-to-registrar transfer? I mean, are we all in agreement that that's what the policy intended?
Well, I can speak for myself. That's the way I've always looked at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
At this policy work as having anything to do with change of ownership or retailer-to-retailer transfers or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Some have put forward that that's what they thought it meant, but I have never seen it that way.
I agree with you, Ross, 100%, and that's why I raised it, because to me it's obvious that we're talking about inter-registrar transfers, but maybe that's just because I just never seen the other, side on this, I don't see it as a leap in policy to say that, because that's what this whole policy is supposed to relate to.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, obviously I'm not as familiar with the background documents or the scope of our work.
Right.
I can say from our perspective, we do, as a registry, receive complaints from various registrars indicating that some registrars are putting additional restrictions on, and it basically, the restrictions that they're putting are if there was a registrant transfer or if there was an internal transfer, then they will restrict a transfer from occurring. So in essence, they're knacking a transfer if it meets certain criteria that they've self-imposed, if you will, beyond what the intent of the transfer policy itself what the intent seemed to be.
Right. To your question or to your statement, Karen, that you'd want to look back at the old policy, I think the title of the policy itself is kind of like the framing of it, right?
Okay.
I don't know if that holds to me it's not a legal thing, it's a policy thing, and there's a slight difference between the two, but, I've said my piece, I'll leave it to you now. any more on that point?
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is obvious, but again, because of problems that registrars have taken, reasons for denial. You've got these nine reasons. Is there a way to say that that's all certain, I mean, you know, or I guess you're, who denies for another reason is in violation. Oh, never mind. It's there. I wanted to make sure that they can't add to this list, but you've got it covered already in the advisory.
Right, right, right. Yeah, hopefully that's still clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think there would need to be a definite change of policy in order to be able to add to that list for any reason.
Right.
Because I do think that there may be a couple of other reasons you'd want to add, you know, as legitimate for denying a transfer, but, you know, that's
clearly
definitely outside of the scope here.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. Okay.
Okay.
Great.
So those are all my comments.
Okay, great. Good. Thank you. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to add on those two documents? Going once? Olaf, you've been very quiet.
Yeah. No, with a good reason.
Yeah, very good.
I think this transfer question, that transfer is actually meaning inter-registrar transfer and nothing else. And, I'm quiet because I sincerely don't want to start a sort of policy development process for good reasons. And you know why. Things that can be sorted out as explanations and explanatory, that's a lot better.
Great. Okay, cool. Thank you. So moving on to the next point. Has everybody had a chance to review Barbara's document? And if yes, are there any questions? Is that a resounding yes with no questions, or?
I haven't looked at it, but I'm sorry. Was it sent recently?
It was sent.
It was Monday.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll look.
Tuesday.
Monday.
This is the it's the document. It's a registry constituency feedback on the list of issues, Margie, which were put forward. Goodness knows how long ago. And it was just the registry constituency's feedback on whether or not these issues were clarifications or policy development exercises, as well as some more background information as to their motivations as to why they thought such, et cetera.
Is there anything
you wanted to highlight in that list, perhaps, Barbara? Or I don't want to make you walk us all through it, but...
Oh, yeah, God forbid I put you through that this
afternoon.
So it's more like us making you do it on your vacation, right?
Oh, no, it's really not a big deal. I think that mainly a lot of what is on this particular list are items that really are more impacting to registrars versus the registries. So, you know, obviously we can, you know, say that we support various languages and put forward and that type of thing. And I think I just wanted to go on the record on behalf of the constituency to you know, say where, you know, where we stand and if we feel that there's additional clarification that might be helpful. Some of the things that we've seen as registries pretty much across the board are, you know, where we have the situation where a registrant transfer occurs, you know, very close to a registrar transfer,
mm-hmm.
and that does tend to cause a lot of issues on our end from registrars when they bring an issue to us, and it's, you know, if for some reason or, you know, somehow either a registrant account at the registrar was violated in such a way that would allow somebody, or compromised, if you will, to allow somebody to go in there and be able to affect a transfer or get an off-code or what have you in order to be able to affect a transfer to another registrar. It looks to us, you know, from a dispute resolution perspective, that the transfer may have been legitimate because the information on the who is was consistent with what was on the FOA. So, and it, from our perspective, I think it makes sense to, you know, maybe address some of those issues where we may want to impose some additional restrictions on transfers. Maybe, you know, restrict a transfer for 60 days or maybe even 30 days, whatever, from the date of registrant transfer. Just so if there is some question, the former registrant has an opportunity to address it before it gets more complicated by the domain being then transferred away to another registrar who, you know, does not have that who is history, if you will, in the case of registrant. Also from our perspective on the registrar side, or excuse me, registry side, of the house is relating to who is and being able to see a clear history of who is data. Because typically the who is information that's provided with disputes does not include a date stamp. It's very difficult to ascertain that that is the who is data that was in effect on the date of the alleged violation. So to be able to provide a log of who is modification in addition to, you know, perhaps a who is record, along with what's being filed with the dispute would be very helpful. So those are, you know, really the side of the house that impacts the registries more on the I guess, policy or dispute policy enforcement or resolution.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, pretty much everything else is, you know, items that, you know, we can weigh in on them, but, you know, really it's the registrars that are going to have to, put in place the mechanisms to, safeguard against, you know, fraudulent transfers and what have you. So we're just kind of, you know, the bystanders on it. I mean, we will process the transfers requests that come in, but, you know, the validation of those really needs to occur before the transfer command is sent to a registry.
Right.
So that's all I had.
Great. Karen and Olaf, I'm actually going to ask you the next question on this particular agenda item. Has there been any additional feedback from any of the other constituencies in and around or related to these policy questions at any point since our last discussions on this?
If I may start, I haven't seen anything except the registry constituency.
Okay.
And, which is very elaborate, I must say. I mean, admirable. And... I've seen nothing else. But, of course, I mean, making the connection to the whois, of course, brings into question the whole development of that quarter, which is subject to another working group and everything.
Gotcha. So there's been no... So since we had our last round of consultations last year on this, actually, it would have been 2 years ago now, I think in 2005. There's been no substantial input from any of the user constituencies beyond what we've already heard.
Well, Karen, you would know much better than I.
Sure.
Yeah, I have one additional point is that, and I'm trying to find where this list is, but... in connection with the discussion concerning the register fly incident, there was an announcement where Paul kind of laid out these areas that he thought should be discussed in the context of what are the policies surrounding registrar accreditation, mm-hmm. and how are we looking at those. And one of the areas that he had in there is just titled transfer policy.
Mm-hmm.
And the questions are, what elements of the transfer policy need to be reformed? Should registrants have an alternative to their current registrar for the issuing of auth codes and the unlocking of them? And should ICANN or another entity be able to do this? So those are the questions that were laid out. Pointed out a few times that there is this transfer review process going on that's kind of independent of this other larger discussion, but it may come up at the meeting, for example, in that context, like what's going on with the transfer policy and what elements do we need to be discussing or thinking about.
Sure. So I think we have the first half of Paul's question well under control, in that these are the elements that need to be revisited, the 38
yeah.
issues, now 39. And to the 39th issue, I don't know that is anything but that would clearly be a policy issue, unless I'm missing something. Would we care to discuss that for a few minutes? Margie, Barbara, do you have any positions on that or any views on that?
Okay, well, what is the 39th you're talking about?
The 39th issue would be whether or not registrants should be able to retrieve their auth codes from third parties for the purposes of unlocking a transfer.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea. I don't know, Ross, how you feel about that.
I haven't considered it either way. I think, you know, the work, I've always viewed the work of this task force, this working group, to not so much weigh the merits of an issue, but to just figure out, is it a clarification or is it a policy action, right?
Oh, I see.
I don't even know what the implications of going through third parties would be at this point.
Yeah.
But continue, please.
It's kind of difficult because how does the third party know that the person who's asking for the auth code is truly authorized to have it? You know, that they are either the registrar or the registrant or the admin contact.
Yeah, there'd need to be some sort of verification.
Yeah, and without an auth code, you don't need that verification, I guess.
Right.
I think it gets really sticky trying to figure out, you know, who are you releasing that information to.
Karen, was there any, can you shed any further, or add any further color to that question in that, was Paul referring to a lot of third parties or a single third party? In other words, would this be something that, you know, any registrar could retrieve an auth code, or in emergencies ICANN could retrieve an auth code, or under regular circumstances ICANN could retrieve an auth code, or do you have any idea what he was kind of driving
at? Well, I think where it came out of is that, you know, again, it came out of the Register Fly experience,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, probably like 80 to 90% of the complaints we were getting were, I can't get my auth code. You know, if registrants could have gotten that, they could have transferred out and the problem would have been much smaller in magnitude.
Right.
But because they could only get it from the registrar that was the source of the problem, that was, you know, kind of a roadblock for everybody concerned. So I think the question came from the, and you know, a lot of people were saying, you know, why can't I can't just give it to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or why can't I get it from, you know, whoever else? And so, you know, obviously that's not something that can be done now. And the question is, deeper question is, how do you avoid the registrant being stuck like that if the registrar is not, you know, complying with what they're supposed to be doing?
Right.
So is one alternative maybe having another third-party way to do that?
So just, I'm making some notes here. I think, so the general, rather than attribute specific remarks to specific people on the subject, the general discussion I'm hearing is that this is a, generally a good idea at a high level, that there are a lot of questions as to how it would be implemented and whom would be able to retrieve those auth codes, and that this would likely be a subject of new policy, not covered under the existing policy. Is that a fair characterization?
I think that's fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could see a situation where, for instance, the registries could hand out bulk auth codes to a third party for distribution or something like that, or, you know, on its face, there's probably something that can be done. I just don't have any good ideas.
What happens if an auth code has not yet been created by the registrar and passed to the registry to be able to provide it to a third party or what have you? Because my understanding that the registrars are to generate those auth codes and then, as I said, they're passed to the registry so they can be authenticated, you know, in the case of a transfer or what have you. But if that's not yet been done yet, I guess how do we go about solving that? So maybe that's just another one of the questions on that we would have to work through in, you know, considering this particular item. If there's no auth code to pass, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who generates it?
Right. Exactly. Okay, that's very good. We'll make sure we capture that as 39.
I definitely would say that in no case, I know in 38 there's a reference to, you know, whether or not the registrar may charge for unlocking items as well. That I would like to say would be, I believe, inappropriate. Not that it's really, it's not really, it's off code, but in some ways it is.
Is that a new issue that we wanted to discuss? Or is that something?
That's actually issue 38 is relating to standards for testing the reasonableness of unlocked procedures. And there was a reference in there as to whether or not registrars would be able to charge a registrant for unlocking a domain name. And since a lot of registrars, automatically will lock the name down, I think it would be inappropriate for them to then turn around and charge a registrant to unlock it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's been consolidated with issue number 11. I'm just looking at here it is.
Right.
Okay. And we're all happy with the view that this is policy and that we need to take a further look at this. Is that still a fair characterization?
I think it's fair, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no other basis for it, really, to do new territory.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Great. Okay. The reason I didn't ask for more registrar feedback on this particular agenda item is mainly because the original list of 38 issues was brought forward from the registrar constituency. So certainly, we've had our chance to bring our ideas forward. But I do want to make sure, Margie, if there's anything that that you wanted to bring out in terms of feedback or anything at this point, that you certainly got the opportunity to do so.
Oh, yeah, no, it's pretty thorough. I mean, I was thinking of all the kinds of things that, we've dealt with here, and they're pretty much addressed in one of these 38, 39,
okay.
I'm comfortable with it.
Great. That's great. We've gone through the 38 issues. That's progress. I'm very happy with that. Okay, so let's move on in the agenda. I can just pull it up here. Okay. So the only other bit of substantive work that's outstanding at this point is a discussion on how we want to deal with the EPP issue. The EPP issue is the original transfer policy recommendations from the GNSO, then GNSO, were crafted in an RRP context. So a lot of the thinking was done within the context of a protocol that is no longer in use in any meaningful way. The question that we need to answer is how do we want to deal with not only the experience we've gained with working with EPP and transfers, but is there a recommendation that will need to come from this working group in terms of next steps for recrafting, redrafting, evolving these recommendations, or do we want to recommend no work for a specific period of time, or really what do next steps look like in terms of making sure that we acknowledge that the shift in protocol has changed and that perhaps more work needs to be done? I don't have a strong preference on that, but I'd like to hear what everybody else is thinking.
I think many of the issues that we've addressed here, or at least raised, pretty much apply to those RRP as well as EPP, especially now that we're putting in some information relative to the off-info code.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, from my mindset, whether or not we would need to take an extensive period of time in order to, make sure that there are any other issues. The original transfers policy does address EPP registries and registrars, and what's expected there as far as, the provision of the auth info codes and that type of thing. So I would say I wouldn't want to hold up any other progress in order to document more thoroughly an EPP-specific experience, because I think we've done a fair amount of that already.
Sure. Is there a is there perhaps a recommendation that we could make along the lines of stating what you just said, but also indicate that somebody else may want to pick up some that or similar work at some point in the future? In other words, is there enough potential future work there that we should note that somehow, or is it just a non-issue from a policy perspective at this point? Maybe Karen or Olaf, if you've got any views on that. I'm not sure what the answer is in this case.
Well, from our end, most of the questions that are problems that came our way that were related to EPP just had to do with the shift from RRP to EPP. You know, when that happened, you know, most of what we got was, how come I need this code now and I didn't before?
Right.
Or how do I get this, and so forth, things like that. So as far as actual policy terms, I can't think of anything that would really need to be called out specifically.
Okay.
Ross, did you have anything specific, that you could see affected? And I know you're a lot more technical than I am.
No, not at all, actually. It's been raised a few times. I wasn't aware of any issues when it was brought up. I was aware of the off-code issue, which is not really an EPP-specific issue. It's just a general, how does this work issue that registrants always have. And if it's not off-codes, it's something else. So I had no operational experience to say that this was an issue. I just wanted to make sure that we raised, discussed, and somehow dealt with it to make sure that for the casual observer that we've dotted the I's, crossed the T's.
Right. So maybe I do have a suggestion.
Sure.
And maybe it's here. And I apologize if I haven't caught it. Something like, you know how we've talked about describing when you can lock and unlock, even if the policy doesn't change on how off codes are issued, perhaps just letting the registrant know about how to get their off code. I mean, for example, I think in the policy you talk about making sure that the registrants are educated on what the transfer rules are, right? If a registrar could, you know, whatever their process happens to be for getting the off code, have some sort of education requirement, I guess.
So are you almost proposing a registrant advisory then?
No. Isn't there, hold on, let me see. I thought I saw somewhere where it was recommended that the registrar educated customers on the transfer policies, right? I mean, I don't remember where I saw that, but I thought it was somewhere in here. And
yeah,
so,
it's section one in the advisory.
Section one in the advisory. I can't say this. Registrar should, right. And so my only point is that in that it should also clarify how to get off codes within that registrar. So ICANN doesn't have to bear the brunt of, you know, I don't know how to get my off code from my registrar.
Okay.
So the policy is clear enough in the sense that, the registrant should be educated about, the necessities of life, and the burden is a bit on the registrar to see to that happens. So rather clarification than a policy issue.
Right.
I agree with that as well.
I think it's a great idea. Okay, excellent. Okay, I think... I think we can probably close off that topic. I'm glad that we had that, and it's certainly a great idea, Margie. I think that brings us to the end of the agenda. Did anyone else have any other issues that they wanted to discuss, bring forward, big, small, otherwise?
Only this. I mean, it feels like we're sorting issues into piles.
Mm-hmm.
One is sort of explanatory, needs clarification and so on. And the second is, might need policy work. And, the outcome of the work, wouldn't that be sort of an advisory that these issues are in the explanatory sort of clarification pile, and these are in the policy pile, and send it off to the council for them to say that, yeah, we agree. And then next step, what do we do with that? What do we do with those in particular that imply some kind of policy work in addition?
Right, right, right. So the general next steps that I'd envision would be that that Karen and I would have a discussion as to you know, the current state of documentation generally, distill the salient points down into, I won't call it a final report, but a document from the working group to the council explaining what we view as next steps are, a communication, if you will. Included in that communication would obviously be a summary of the discussions, an outline of which clarifications needed to be made, an outline of which new policy work needed to be undertaken, as well as the documents that Karen has produced. There's still a few moving parts, but one or two live issues that need to be sorted out in advance of that, specifically that that clarification around what transfers means, for instance.
Uh-huh.
But certainly the next order of business is that communication from the working group to the council. So what I would want to do is have that conversation with Karen first, distill it down, circulate that document or those sets of documents back to the working group, leave them open for comments for a week or two, and then really close off our work.
So then it would be up to the GNSO to, I guess, address the items that are clarifications, and then, I guess, within a fairly short order time frame, and then address the policy issues more in a longer term. Do we have an idea of what the time frames involved would be?
The mechanics of whether or not the council would need to take action to have the advisories issued is not a process I'm familiar with. I don't believe that that's necessarily the case. It may be helpful, though, if some sort of a motion saying these clarifications are great, please issue an advisory. I'm not sure if council would actually have to explicitly take action on that, though. But certainly on the policy-related items, they would need to request an issues report and then move that ahead through the formal PDP. So this, these areas where new policy is required would essentially be recrafted into a terms of reference for whatever working group or task force came next. If any came next. If council doesn't agree that more work is required, then they could simply not act.
Okay, thanks.
Karen, did that sound like a reasonable plan to move this ahead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I would have expected as well.
Great. So with that, does anybody else have anything to add before we close off this call?
Sounds fine, says Olaf.
Great. Thank you, Olaf. Stay tuned then to the mailing list for some timelines. I'll try and circle back with Karen over the next couple of days to kind of nail down what all these moving parts look like, circulate a plan of action, and then hopefully we can wrap this up really quickly. Enjoy your vacation, Barbara, and thank you very much.
And apologies for the background dogs. They're not mine. I've got a cat.
Very good. All right, have a good afternoon, everyone.
Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye.